serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and an episode devoted to the traveling exhibit called Courage and Compassion, helping the rest of us understand the experience of Japanese Americans during World War II. One of the perks, if you visit the exhibit in Kingsburg, California through February 4th, or at future stops in places like Chicago, Minneapolis, Albuquerque, or Monterey, is that you can also pick up free family passes for the Go for Broke National Education Center's permanent display in the Los Angeles area. We've heard about this Kingsburg version of the exhibit from its curator, as well as a Nisei veteran whose story is included. But some of the more powerful elements of this display are interactive. You can follow along yourself on computer screens and have to make decisions that Japanese Americans were faced with in the wake of Executive Order 9066. You can write down examples of courage that you've witnessed that run parallel to some of the stories that you'll learn about. And I guess I shouldn't tell you everything, because it's going to be better if you experience it yourself. Dale Ikeda has done that. He's also done as much as just about anybody I know in the Central California area to honor the sacrifices of Japanese Americans during World War II to make sure their story of perseverance in the face of injustice is preserved as both an inspiring and cautionary tale. And I think Dale's perspective is a valuable one for us to obtain with respect to this traveling exhibit and the fact that one of just 10 cities in the whole U.S. to host it is Kingsburg, California, with a population of just under 12,000 people.
I think it's a great honor and a feather in the cap of the Kingsburg community. The exhibit is being sponsored by the Kingsburg Historical Society. Dave Meyer has been the laboring oar and all that. I was called in as a member of the Japanese American community to provide input, and it was our honor to have the Japanese American Citizens League and the Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 8499 co-sponsor a nice reception to kick off the event. For me personally, it's a continuation of an educational process, and it's also a way to honor the Nisei, that second generation, as well as the Issei, the first generation of Japanese Americans who immigrated here. Because of them, I attribute my success in life. I became an attorney, became a judge, and I wonder if I could have achieved my personal success without the efforts of those who came before me, in particular the Nisei veterans, the Japanese American veterans of World War II, who fought in Europe and the Pacific in a way as a Sansei, third-generation Japanese-American. The exhibit honors our parents and grandparents for their courage, their perseverance and sacrifice in the face of adversity. As an American, I think it's a wonderful story, not just a Japanese-American story, but an American story of a community faced with adversity. A lot of communities have faced that as they immigrated to America and overcame hardship. They sought the American dream. For Japanese-Americans, it became a nightmare during World War II, but ultimately, through perseverance and sacrifice, hard work and effort, Japanese-Americans have gain rights as full citizens in this country, and we have wonderful examples of those icons of the community achieving the American dream, whether it's Senator Daniel Inouye or Secretary Norman Mineta or General Eric Shinseki or others. So it's great that this has come to a small community like Kingsburg, and it's an opportunity to tell the stories of folks from Central California who contributed. Over 120,000 Americans of Japanese ancestry were forcibly removed from their homes, their farms, their schools, their jobs, their occupations, and in turn for nearly 3 years against their will, basically prisoners of war in a sense by their own government. And yet Nisei volunteered to fight in Europe and in the Pacific and did so with distinction. So it's great to tell that story. What I like about the Kingsburg exhibit is it also tells the story of the neighbors and friends who took care of farms, took care of property, and greeted their neighbors back with open arms and returned that property to them so that Japanese Americans could continue on with their lives afterward.
It's powerful to see those stories, and you see these little slivers that reflect
a bigger picture. And you said something, that it's not just a Japanese-American story, that it's an American story. And I get the sense, as I walk around this exhibit with you a little bit, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like what you're most enthused about with this being here is what it can do for the future. Not necessarily chronicling the past, but that it could have an impact on our future. Am I getting that right? And if so, what are you hoping comes out of this?
Well, first let's start with the basics. Those who fail to learn the lessons of history are doomed to repeat it. And so we don't want this repeated on any Americans, whether they're Muslim or from Arab country or otherwise. Certainly have issues today that bear upon some of the same questions of loyalty and segregating out a community to be treated unfairly. It also, I think, in a broader sense, is an inspirational story, not just about what the Japanese Americans did, but what the neighbors have done. Those who helped the Japanese Americans during the war took a risk, because in some communities they were called Jap lovers, were themselves discriminated against and treated unfairly. But I think it tells a story that in times of crisis, we see the best and worst in people. And that's certainly true here. On the one hand, there was hatred, there was discrimination in the worst way. Yet despite that, there are these stories of individuals who did the right thing and helped their neighbors and friends and stood for the principles that America stands for, which is equal treatment, due process of law, fairness, justice. So it tells an important story that can inspire us into the future, so that when we have to make some difficult choices, we do the right thing.
Well said. And you mentioned that your career has been in the legal profession. With that perspective, do you ever look at any of this information, read about the history, or hear the stories from the Nisei and say, how did they get away with that? How could a country with these laws allow those things to happen?
I ask myself that same question from at least seventh grade, and in high school I had started taking an interest in the story and finding out more. That's really what got me interested in history and law. I went to Stanford University, studied history, did research on the American Friends Services Committee that helped the Japanese Americans during World War II, went to law school at King Hall School of Law at UC Davis, read about the Korematsu case and a little footnote on the Urabayashi and Yasui cases that dealt with the exclusion of Japanese Americans and also with the issue of curfews. And there were also travel restrictions. When I had the opportunity to work on a memorial at the fairgrounds, we dedicated that memorial in 1992, the 50th anniversary of the executive order. And it was a privilege and honor to work on the other memorials.
And there's just an example right there, where something that was so unfortunate and so devastating became the seed for great things in the future, for motivating you. And I know you see some of those silver linings throughout this. But as you walk around the exhibit, are there certain elements of it that, even for you who've been marinating in this for most of your life, that it grabs you, that it's powerful, that you think it tells a story that people will really identify with and learn from?
There's an interactive section. Most people will be reluctant to spend the time going through the station, but it's very telling. It not only teaches the history, but puts the reader in the position of somebody having to face difficult decisions. How would they respond to questions 27 and 28 if they were asked, would you forswear allegiance to the country that your forefathers came from, and will you fight for the U.S. without restriction or qualification if called to do so, without any explanation as to what the consequences were? In the case of Japanese Americans, if they answered no or no, no, then they were sent to Tule Lake, a segregated high-security concentration camp.
So what would you have answered, Dale?
That's a good question. I would like to think that I would have answered yes, yes. I would like to think that when given the opportunity, I would have volunteered to serve in the U.S. military service. But it's hard to say, because that's looking backwards. And how would you feel if you're given only 6 days' notice to settle your affairs, go to the Fresno Fairgrounds, which had been turned into a concentration camp with military-like barracks hastily built, being there, not even in some cases being able to take in baseball equipment, a bat, because it might be used as a weapon, and then asked to answer these questions? It'd be difficult.
No doubt.
And you probably get sick of me mentioning it, but I can never see you without thinking of your uncle Fumio as one of the first Nisei veterans I ever interviewed over a decade ago. He served in the military intelligence service. There's another story in this exhibit of someone from the Selma Kingsburg area who also was in the MIS, but ended up with a real unique role, not just in the war, but in the post-war period. What can you tell me about Khan Tagami and his unique legacy that's celebrated here in this exhibit?
Lieutenant Khan Tagami was born in Selma. His family had ties to Kingsburg. We have records that at least some of his family members attended Kingsburg High School because their names are in the yearbook. He was in the military intelligence service. I believe he was with Merrill's Marauders at one time, which was a famous unit that would make attacks in the India-Burma area. Anyway, the important part for me has to do with his assignment after America defeated Japan, and he was the personal interpreter to General Douglas MacArthur, the commander of the occupational forces. But more importantly, he served as a liaison to the emperor. On one occasion, General MacArthur asked him to deliver a message to the emperor that the Western media would seek interviews, and it was up to him whether or not he wanted to take part in those interviews. So Lieutenant Tagami was permitted to meet with the emperor, and in a rare one-on-one session, the only one that I'm aware of with the emperor and somebody from the West, he delivered the message. As he was getting ready to leave, the emperor said, "Lieutenant Tagami, I want to thank you and the other Nisei veterans for acting as a bridge between our two countries." And I think it's such a great story because it tells us that the Nisei veterans not only helped to win the war in Europe and in the Pacific, but it also helped establish a lasting peace between the U.S. and Japan that exists today. Part of that legacy is related, if I may go into that. Khan's son, John Tagami, worked in Congress as an aide. Two of the projects he worked on related to the Nisei veterans. One was to have Congress pass special legislation recognizing the Military Intelligence Service and awarding it the Presidential Unit Citation, which was difficult because the Military Intelligence Service was used to provide interpreters, translators, and interrogators to different units in the Pacific. So they weren't an identifiable segregated unit, so it required special legislation. He managed to do that. There were 7 Presidential Unit Citations for the 442nd. And 1 Presidential Unit Citation for the MIS. And then he also helped with the legislation to upgrade 20 recipients of the Distinguished Service Cross to Medals of Honor. That included Senator Dan Inouye's Medal of Honor. He lost his arm fighting in Italy and was Attorney General in Hawaii after the war. Became Hawaii's first congressman after it became a state, and later its first senator.
And that happened in the 1990s, and the implication, of course, was what all of those young men did was worthy of the Medal of Honor, but they had been denied for one reason or another, and in many cases the reason was probably because they were Japanese American.
Exactly. Only one Medal of Honor was awarded during the war. The time, the statute of limitations for conferring the Medal of Honor had long passed. So it took, as you say, 50 years to accomplish that.
And the son of someone who had been so involved at the end of the war. And when you told the story of Khan Tagami, I'm just imagining, what are the odds of that? That a young man whose family is held prisoner is over there halfway across the world brokering a resolution, or at least in the aftermath, figuring out how to proceed with the Emperor of Japan. And who else could have done that in that moment? But what are the odds that someone could come from that situation here as an outcast to that position of such great importance?
Khan Tagami had actually studied in Japan. He was what we call Kibei, born in America, studied in Japan, and then returned to America. And I had heard a story, probably from John Tagami, the son, that the emperor was in a train going through a village where Khan was living, going to school. And all of the students were to bow down when the train was to pass the town, not to look up because the emperor was a sun god and they might be blinded, and to honor the the emperor as he passed. So that is an interesting story to go from that to having a one-on-one audience with the emperor.
Anything else that you want to mention about the exhibit, feel free, but to see Bob Yano out here, almost 94 years old, and has all his memorabilia here, and you can see on his face what it means to him to have this here in Kingsburg. How satisfying is that for you that this is happening while someone like he is still here to be a part of it?
I think it's wonderful. We have a great country, a country built upon wonderful values, some of which appear in the Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed with their Creator with certain inalienable rights, including life, liberty, and the pursuit of justice. When people can see that we're not a perfect country, that we were formed in order to form a more perfect union, it's really a striving, and there have been so many things that have helped ameliorate some of the harm. And to have him, and we had a reception, he had probably 20 family members here to honor him and his generation and the veterans for all that they've done for all of us, is very gratifying to me. I'd like to mention one other legacy story. Shortly after the attack on Pearl Harbor, Japanese American men who were not already in service reclassified 4C, enemy alien ineligible for the draft. And so these second generation firstborn Nisei, who were citizens, are now being classified enemy alien. Of course, at some point, the 100th Battalion was created out of the Hawaii. They wanted 3,000 volunteers. They got 10,000 who applied, and over 3,500 served initially. And then the 442nd was created and established this wonderful war record, often described as the most decorated unit in American military history for its size and length of service. And then one generation later, Eric Shinseki, the son of one of those reclassified as 4C, became chief of staff of the Army, the highest office in the Army. And it's also inspiring to me that he was nominated to be Secretary of Veterans Affairs. Eric Shinseki was, on Pearl Harbor Day. For me, December 7th was always a day of anxiety growing up. Didn't necessarily want to be outside. There were stories of the people shooting into the JCL office in West Fresno. A lady was hit unprovoked as she was in her car, and the only thing we could figure was it was December 7th and she was Japanese American. And then to have Eric Shinseki nominated on Pearl Harbor Day, that made us all very proud.
It's amazing what can happen over time. And speaking of time, I hope you'll take some time while there is still time. Kingsburg is accessible from just about anywhere in California. It's right smack dab in the middle of the state. Go experience this powerful exhibit between now and February 4th. For those of you listening in other states, it might be coming your way too. I have that list of future stops linked at hometownheroesradio.com, where of course you can also find quite a few episodes in which Japanese American veterans tell their personal World War II stories. Thanks to Dale Ikeda, Dave Meyer, and the one and only Bob Yano for their time and perspective. And thank you so much for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.